Good evening. James McCanny here with my Science Hour, August 9th, 2012. And is the end of the world imminent? Well, I'm not sure. I don't have any information that the world is going to end in 2012. Do you? There are lots of websites out there claiming that. I don't have any of that information myself. I've seen a lot of bogus information. I've yet to see anything real. So at any rate, I first want to talk about a comment that I made last week on my show about water coming into the atmosphere. Now, this is a very important topic, and somebody wrote in and was a little confused by this. And so I thought this is a good opportunity to explain this in detail. So here's the story. I've talked about the Duluth flood. That was earlier this summer. Tremendous amount of water coming into the atmosphere. Where did it come from? That water was not in the storm systems. As those storm systems moved across the United States, they really weren't even there. There weren't any storm systems. They developed somewhere along the point of this air mass moving over Iowa, then moving northeasterly through Minnesota. All of this water came into that storm during that time. So where did all this amazing amount of water come from? And it dropped in Duluth, 10 inches in 10 hours? Just a tremendous amount of water that dumped on that little city, just literally destroying it. But where did that water come from? And on my show I said the only place that that water could have come from is outer space. And so people are probably trying to imagine how this happens. At any rate, so I want to explain the details here. So to do that, let's jump off and look at a comet. A comet in the plasma discharge comet model, my comet model, it shows how comets are attracting the tail material in the comet. This the main component in a comet tail is water. So the hydrogen, oxygen, where does the water come from? Is the water in molecular form in outer space? And the answer is no. The majority of atomic material or molecular material in outer space, the majority of it is in atomic form, the carbons, the hydrogens, the nitrogens, and oxygen. And those are the building blocks of much of what we call organic chemistry. So when a comet draws in this material and the atoms come in atomic form, they start combining as they are brought together under strong electric fields. It gives them a perfect environment for chemical combinations to occur. In the hydrocarbons, let's just look at water, H2O. You really don't get a whole big line of chains of much larger atoms, and that's something unique. Water, H2O, oxygen and water combine, oxygen and hydrogen combine into water, and they don't have a whole series like carbon and hydrogen. They don't have a whole series of bigger atoms that build, and probably that's lucky because water is the basis for just about everything that happens on Earth, related to us anyway. We are a water animal, so to speak. We're a water being, if you want to call it not an animal, but our physical being is based on water. And but if you look at the hydrocarbons, carbon and hydrogen, you have an immense number of combinations. And so you get all the way up to, there are solids. You have oils and grease and very light hydrocarbons that are gaseous in form. So hydrocarbons also form a large part of the spectrum of chemicals that you find in comet tails. Nitrogen, hydrogen, carbon, oxygen. You find the nucleotides in comet tails. So all of these basic chemicals, sulfur and oxygen, sulfur dioxide, all kinds of chemicals exist in outer space. But what happens? Typically, the material, the atomic material, exists in that form, atomic material. It only starts to combine once it starts to get into the region around a comet tail. And so, okay, now let's jump back to Earth. Earth is a comet. Just like all the other planets in the solar system, it is discharging the solar capacitor. It is, as this material, this atomic material comes, is drawn in on snake-like extensions that go out into outer space, and these have been measured. There was a guy named Lou Frank who, was this back in the 80s now? I'm trying to think of exactly when this happened, but on one of the Polar Explorer satellites, they put a device, a camera, that took pictures in ultraviolet and looked for specifically for water. And what they found was patches of the Earth's upper atmosphere that every now and then would just kind of explode with water. And so they attributed it to small micro comets, thinking that comets were dirty snowballs. But the only problem is a small piece of ice coming into the atmosphere would disintegrate, and it would not cover a big, wide, broad area, as the observations show. And so, of course, once again, my theoretical work is prominent in explaining these phenomena, in that the area, that region of the upper atmosphere, acts like a comet. It's physically charged, electrically charged. The material comes in. And by the way, that water then goes all the way down through the atmosphere. And I really have to get a kick out of NASA. They're really grabbing for straws now. And this guy, last week I announced that NASA came out with this story where the water shoots up from thunderstorms all the way up to the upper atmosphere. They're trying to pad this now. And, of course, that guy is saying that it opens up the ozone holes and will cause cancer. By the way, the Russians have said all along that ozone holes are a natural phenomenon. They've been here all along, and there's nothing new or amazing about these. That ozone hole gimmick of NASA it's just been one of their, like I say, gimmicks for a long time. And they never had any previous data, but then when it was discovered that there was like a region in the polar areas of Earth where there was kind of a hole in the ozone layer, they were like, oh, goodness, the CFCs are causing this, so everybody had to change their refrigeration. There was never, ever a shred of evidence that linked CFCs with the upper atmosphere ozone layers. What happened? Some chemist did some experiments in a laboratory, and they said, well, CFCs destroy ozone. Well, that's in the laboratory. How do the little leakage that occurs from a refrigerant, how does this magically all get organized and get up to the upper atmosphere to destroy ozone? Well, and then stay there. You know, nobody ever answered any of these questions. Nobody ever took any data. But they said CFCs are destroying the ozone layer, so everybody had to change their refrigerants. Well, it was another absurd tier 2 standard science ridiculous ploy. And now they're trying to bring this back and say that water shoots up from the top of thunderstorms when it's actually backwards. All of the science that they have is backwards, upside down, backwards, and ridiculous. But at any rate, what is really going on is the water is coming in from the upper atmosphere. These then connect electrically down through the atmosphere to the upper edges of thunderstorms so that water can drop down into that thunderstorm, dropping down by gravity. I'm just trying to imagine how this water shoots up all the way to the ionosphere in opposing gravity, and it's neutral water. Well, that's the NASA ridiculous science. It's so bizarre. They don't answer any of these questions, but they get it published in Science Magazine. So at any rate, how does it really work? Well, the water comes in from above, and it works just like the comet tail. So when the hydrogen and oxygen atoms are coming in, they form near the Earth, and so then they start dropping down into the atmosphere on a big, broad area, and that's what the satellites have been measuring. Microcomets, little teeny ice ball comets, according to standard theory, not my theory, could not explain the wide, broad areas of water that are seen to come and go in the upper atmosphere. Okay, so at any rate, then that water can drop down using gravity, of course, to drop down and feed the water into these storm systems. And so these are variable. They come and they go. They are variable regions in the upper atmosphere that are electrically charged negatively, just like a comet nucleus, and the process is exactly the same. So at any rate, in those regions connect down into the low cells. This is, by the way, explained in my weather book, the Principia Meteorologia, the Physics of Sun, Earth, Weather. It's explained in that book how all of this works. So at any rate, just reiterating here, because as I said, when one person writes in and asks a question, then you can bet that there's lots of people out there who would like to know about this and have it explained in a little more detail. By the way, tonight's main science topic, I'll be dealing with a Planet X question. I talk about this, and a lot of times I take very specific aspects of the Planet X topic. This week I'll be talking about, of course, I've always said there are many, many of these. I've given lectures before on the life cycle of a Planet X object, but I'm going to go into a little bit more detail on the regularity of Planet X type objects, the periodicity, and what happens to them once they become captured into the solar system and they start working their way in. What is somewhat the life cycle of a Planet X type of object? So that'll be the main science topic. Just a quick comment on, let me do these in order so I don't forget any. Previous weeks, and by the way, I'll be doing minimal commentary on financing and banking interest, those type of topics, or controlling groups in the government. I know there's other talk show hosts covering those topics, but understand that these groups control science, scientists, engineering, and they're using the amazing technology. All of the amazing technology that's being developed today is being used to basically monitor people, to control science. Anything good or informative goes up the chain to the world controllers, and the people down here are being abused terribly. The human rights violations are just astounding today around the world and in the United States. The abuse of power, the arrogant abuse of power is the only term you can call it, to subjugate the population. Old Rome, Caesar, Nazi Germany. None of those people hold a candle to what's going on today with the level of intrusion into people's households through your computer, through television sets that have monitoring chips in them, through all kinds of the electric water meter that goes on your house to measure your water can also communicate with all kinds of devices in your house, including products that you buy, the microchips that they want to put in everybody to track people, little insect monitoring devices that can fly into your house and sit in a corner and monitor you. I mean, it's just beyond bizarre what is going on today. So when I talk about the finances and world banking, understand that the main thing that they want to do is control science, because without all of this science and engineering and technology to create wars, to monitor people, to keep control to make sure that nobody gets out of line. Being able to blow up a wedding in Iraq from somebody sitting in a nice air-conditioned room in the base of the Colorado Rocky Mountains. This is technology, drones that constantly are monitoring the United States, monitoring the movement of people, lists of people's names, computer lists to monitor and coordinate government departments so that everybody is basically kept in a series of rules that nobody could possibly obey all of the rules because there are many of them are contradictory. So at any rate, when I talk about banking and control, understand that this is not even possible without science and technology, and that 99.999% of all scientists, degreed scientists and engineers work in some capacity for the government. So at any rate, when I make comments on that, understand where it's coming from and what the reason is, or that, for example, your space program is a smokescreen behind the space program is a real space program, and there's all kinds of things going on that you will never, ever hear about. And it's being paid for, funded through your hard labors in what? This is a great example. It's actually the next thing on my list. Is the Mars rover. Oh, gee, all the scientists at NASA cheered and it landed on Mars and now they're seeing pictures of Mars. And, you know, I saw the pictures, just a comment here. But this is the garbage science. Do you think, let me ask you this, do you really think, sit down, put your hand on your chin and think, turn your brain on, you know, and think, do you think that that is the best technology that we have to put something on Mars and to look around and search? No, it is not. Believe me, it is not. They have airplanes that can fly around Mars for days and days and days, looking at high detail. You don't see any of that. You see some clunky thing that sits on the surface of Mars and in one spot, and it gives you a view of Mars. Okay. But do you think, I want you to answer this question honestly to yourself, do you really think that's the extent of equipment that they have placed on Mars to explore and understand it? No, I can tell you it is not. And so it's good enough, what they put out there is good enough to fool all the NASA Trekkies that run around and think that this is great science and read astronomy or Sky and Telescope magazine and, you know, think that comets are dirty snowballs. It's good enough to fool those people because, you know, they're just, you know, like I say, Trekkies. But the average person out there has got to sit back and say, you know, this isn't the top technology of the day, you know. So anyway, when I comment about financial situations or interest or control of the public, it does relate to science, and it wouldn't even be there if it weren't for the control of science. Okay, enough of that topic. But about the Mars rover, I saw the pictures too, and I don't look for the same thing that most people look for in those pictures. I'm not looking for a face on Mars. I'm not looking for I'm not listening to the NASA explanations. But their comment is, gee, how Earth-like is Mars? And so off in the distance, you see these rolling, smoothed-out mountain chains. And, gee, how did they become rounded and nice and weathered? That's through water erosion. Water erosion. You look at the pebbles on the ground. They're round. They're round. That's water erosion, folks. Water erosion. And you look at Mars and it's bone dry. Bone dry. Where's all the water? Well, NASA says that it wasn't there for, you know, that there may have been ocean billions of years ago. What rabbit's hat did they pull that number out of? Well, they got to say that to keep their funding because, once again, the control of science. If people knew that Mars lost its atmosphere and oceans a few thousand years ago when a big comet came by, gee, don't you think that they would automatically suspect that that could happen to planet Earth? And that the leaders of the world are, you know, illustrious leaders and banker elites and the controlled presidents and controlled presidential candidates. Do you think that they would lose their power overnight? Absolutely. Nobody would pay them a dime of attention. Not at all. So they have to keep this facade, and NASA is key to this, of keeping that thought. You know, millions, billions of years ago. Who's going to contradict that? Nobody was here billions of years ago. Where does NASA get that number? It's just long ago, far away. And they don't talk about what happened to the oceans. They don't have an explanation for that. But you look in those pictures and you see an Earth-like environment. Why is it Earth-like? Why is it different than the moon? Because of one thing and one thing only, water. Water, 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 water. Water, water, water. Water. Mars looks the way it looks because of water erosion, the presence of water, rounded pebbles, rounded rocks, sand. That comes from water, beaches, rivers, rain, wind and rain. That's where that comes from. And all of Mars looks like that. Mars has some areas that are cratered. That's because those were the highlands. If you look at Mars, you can see all of the areas where the oceans were, and there are very, very, very few craters, impact craters in those regions. And look at a map of Mars. There's one in my weather book. There's a great series of photos in my weather book, once again, high detailed photos. By the way, we took a lot of expense at printing those high-resolution photos in my weather book. And you can see the erosion on Mars, the little river beds. Mars has tremendous dust storms every year. And any of those features, if this were caused billions of years ago, you wouldn't see any of them. You wouldn't see any of them. If it was 100,000 years ago, you wouldn't see any of them. If it was 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, then yeah, you're going to see them. You're going to see those pretty clearly. The erosion, the little riverbeds, the erosion on the Olympus Mons. You're going to see all of these water effects, the water erosion. You're going to see it on Mars. Water, water, water. Mars. Everything you see there is a result of water. And the NASA scientists, the closest thing they can say is it looks rather Earth-like. Okay, so at any rate, enough of that. But talking about Earth once again, I want to talk about tropical storms. Of course, we have a storm that just tried to become a hurricane but didn't. It's called Ernesto down in the Caribbean. And that storm will basically disintegrate as it moves over land. It never reached hurricane proportion. There are dozens and dozens of of tropical storm-type systems in the Atlantic and Caribbean and reaching out over the land of Central America, but none of them are developing into hurricanes. We have a minor hurricane that just popped into hurricane status. It's going to leave hurricane status just about as fast as it moved into hurricane status. It's called Gilda. I think it's called Gilda out in the, Gilda in the Pacific. But that's it. So we have a very weak hurricane season. We're in the middle of August, and we have a very, very weak hurricane season. These storm systems are not developing into hurricanes. They're not developing eyes. They're not swirling. As they come off of that nub of Western Africa, they are not building into storms over the week or week and a half that it takes them to move across the Atlantic Ocean. They are they're just not developing, and this is August. We could see hurricane activity at any time, But the point I'm making is, up to now, we have not seen any real hurricane activity, an extremely weak hurricane season. But I love this. In the middle of the CNN article on the hurricane season, in the middle they have a link, and it says, NASA study, extreme weather climate change, extreme weather caused by climate change. And so they got to get that climate change little plug in there, right in the middle of the article about a storm that, and they build up Ernesto, this the Hurricane Prediction Center always does this. When they have a weak hurricane season, we are 50% through, and their predictions are just absolutely bogus. Their predictions for this year, by the way, they stopped making predictions, but let's extrapolate on their predictions of past years, and what they would say is this would be an above hurricane season. And remember, the two main hurricane predictors quit and said nothing we've ever done has any validity at all. Remember Gray, William Gray, and what was the other guy's name? I've forgotten. Quit the national hurricane prediction business and basically made an announcement and said nothing we have ever done has any validity at all. And I never could quite figure out where that came from or who allowed them out into public to say that. The best that I could imagine was that the security agencies, etc., the ones that operate the weather satellites, the ones that create and build up hurricanes, if they said that, then it would allow the people to control weather, and there wouldn't be any dysfunctional unrelated announcements from the National Hurricane Prediction Center and what was really happening. And we did see that a number of years ago, about 7 years ago, when there were a lot of hurricanes. The hurricane predictors were, as the hurricanes were developing and progressing, they were unable to make any predictions about the movement of these storms. We saw hurricanes doing loop-de-loops out in the Atlantic. It was very clear that these were manipulated storms, and the hurricane predictors were going, what's going on here? And so it was pretty clear that they had no clue as to the fact that these storms were being manipulated. But at any rate, for whatever reason, Gray and his buddy came out last year and said, we're not doing this anymore, and nothing we have ever done has any validity. Wow. Pretty amazing. But at any rate, the sun, we are in the middle of August, and we are smack dab in the middle of the August return current sheet. Now, this, as I've said before, the sun has it puts out an excess current of protons in the solar wind. This builds up a capacitor, and that wind blows all the way out past the orbit of Pluto, as far as we can tell right now. About three times the distance to Pluto is where that big capacitor, the positive side of that capacitor, sits. And that cannot continue forever, so there has to be a return current sheet. The big one comes back to the sun where Earth moves in the month of August. And so there's a return current sheet. So at any rate, we are in the middle, smack dab in the middle of the August return current sheet right now. It's that return current that comes back from the outer capacitor, positive side of the outer capacitor, moving back to the sun. I just checked the dynamic pressure on the solar wind. I just was checking that out, and it is zero. It is zero. In other words, the flow rate of the solar wind is backwards. And that's a time when we typically have actually a lot of hurricane activity. And it's because we're in a very big current flow. And so basically the comet kind of moves backwards in the solar wind. The conditions of Earth, the electrical conditions around Earth, it's moving against the flow of the solar wind. So it would be like, say you're... Let me use an example. say you were out in a big lake and there was a movement of water, just a general movement of water in this lake. But if you get to one spot, there's a stream that comes in the opposite direction, and that comes in very forcefully, a very powerful stream that comes in the opposite direction of the flow of the lake. And you're in your boat in the middle of that flow. What's going to happen? You're going to feel the return flow, but you're going to be caught in the middle of the general large flow in the lake and then this extremely powerful narrow flow. That's what it's like. But this is in terms of plasma sheets and plasma situation. Plasma is a rarefied gas, extremely rarefied charged gas in outer space. And so at any rate, these plasma conditions work just like electricity in a wire, except there's no wire. These currents move freely in outer space with no resistance. And so at any rate, we are in the middle of that August return current sheet, but the fact is that the solar conditions are extremely low right now. And I know people are talking about, oh, we're heading into this solar maximum and all of this. The reality is, if you look in general and compare our solar cycle right now, moving up to possibly a solar maximum in the year 2014, if you look at the current solar cycle, it is extremely weak. The physical reality, we've had some big solar flares, we've had some big sunspots, but averaged out according to history, they have been very weak. So, once again, we're in the middle of an extremely weak hurricane season. We have lots of thunderstorms, but no developing hurricanes. And so I suspect this is going to go on. I wouldn't be surprised if we did see some mild hurricane activity, but it's just not, it's right now it's not happening. Up to now it has not happened. So that's somewhat of a solar report and tropical weather report. Also, if you look at the South Pacific and moving over into the China Sea area, etc., you look at Japan, they have not had the typical typhoon season that they would normally have. So the whole world is very, very weak. The solar conditions are very, very weak. And that makes one ponder why we have had this tremendous drought, the tremendous heat that we have had. And there again, I attribute that to electrical conditions. In other words, it's heating up Earth like a light bulb. There is heat coming in, but it's not in the form of solar lights. So at any rate, I just want to make a quick comment that when you look at the news and you look at, by the way, we had another shooting incident, of course, and when you look at this, it's clear. I mean, if you don't understand this, I hope you go beat your head against the wall a little bit. These shootings are government controlled. That's the only way you can look at these. They're positioned in time, and the way they're put together, these people are clearly out of it, but what you see is a consistency in that the mind control, the type of people that are doing this are just subject to mind control. And the other side of this is that these, you would call them sleepers, individual sleepers, they call them, out there that can be turned on at a moment's notice in a community near you. And that's the point, that this is taking place any place. That's the point of random terrorism. But it's not just these people running out doing this by themselves. And that's what they want to make it look like. And, of course, these people then die in the process, so they're not around to talk. All of their computers and their computer information is confiscated, and the government can spin any story they want, and who's there to challenge it or investigate what really happened to these people 6 months, a year before these incidents. But the, you know, and that's just one little example, but the world is becoming a very, very dangerous place. And it doesn't have to be that way. In the security, what would you call it? In the security industry, in the protection racket industry, you have to keep violence going if you're in control. It's just like the mob back in Chicago in the, you know, back in the 30s. They had everybody paying them money, and they had a series of goons going around to beat everybody up. They were just the toughest guys around. And nobody, the individual people, were just out there trying to make a buck, and they had no defenses. So the bottom line is that if you use force, if you use ugly techniques, then, yeah, you can control people. But now it's being done through the government. The government is doing it, and who controls them? The banks. So if you don't understand those relationships, then the world becoming a very dangerous place. There are many, 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 many things being operated today. So I don't have to go into those details, just making a comment that today it's the world is becoming an extremely dangerous place. And economics does not help anything. A lot of third world countries, people are robbing or killing people for $100. You know, give me your money, and if it's not enough, they just as soon kill you as not. So, yes, it's not, you have the drug wars going on in Mexico. And you see this, what a lot of people don't understand is that they think that, for example, the drug wars, oh, that's just those bad drug people. No, this has been fueled by, number one, drug laws, which make the price of the drugs go way up, and number two, our own very fine CIA and other government agencies that have been in the drug trafficking industry, and a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of people don't understand what has really caused the world to become a dangerous place. The Mideast situation, bad foreign policy by the U.S., Latin America, the Mideast, other parts of the world. Okay, enough of that. There have been recent, and I don't know where these come from, but clearly there has been effort put in and a planning stating that there are genealogical studies now linking 42 presidents to King John of England. I believe it was King John back in the Robin Hood days who signed the Magna Carta, but claiming that 42 presidents are related to this king. Absolute nonsense. And then there's a genealogy study that I saw come out. It says that Obama is related to the first slave. And I looked into this, and here's what they did. They started out with what they called the first registered slave, and they went forward in time. And then they went back with Obama about four generations backwards, and there was some mixing in the middle, and I love their explanation, that there's a lot of lost data, but somehow they magically linked these two together and then made this relationship and then made a public announcement. It's pretty phenomenal, and the kind of politics that are going on, these relative to these genealogical studies, there is no, let me repeat, there is no evidence that anything they have said relative to this is true. They have linked some names, and that's about as loose a connection as anybody could possibly have. It's not a genealogical study, it's a name study. And so people are getting along. It's kind of like the Mayan calendar thing. People picked up something, and now everybody's a genealogical expert. And because they can link one name to another, or through three or four generations of lost information, somehow say that this is true, then they can. And the problem is, that this is actually getting airtime. So that's the ridiculous part of this whole thing. It's how is this getting any airtime at all? Well, clearly somebody is behind this. And to link 42 presidents to the same King of England is beyond absurd. Anyway, just saw a article, world food prices are skyrocketing because of the U.S. drought. And I've talked to people who are farmers. I get to talk to a lot of people around the country, various parts, and lately I've been asking, what's the crops like there? And a lot of these people are farmers. One guy in Iowa told me that they were in about a 10-mile patch of rain 15 miles away, or he said 12 miles away. He said the corn crop is just zero. It's basically not there. He said there are places in Illinois. They've already plowed the corn under, hoping that they might get some kind of secondary crop at the end of the season. But the U.S. corn output is going to be, oh, maybe a sixth to an eighth of what it normally would be. And, of course, that's going to drive up world food prices. A lot of people will starve to death because of this drought, simply because food prices are going up. It's what happened, remember, when ethanol was introduced and a lot of corn became diverted to biofuels. The price of rice went up and a lot of people in India starved to death because the Americans' need for biofuel, and of course that industry has gone by the wayside due to lack of government subsidies. But at any rate, the price of food, and I can see this, I saw fish in the supermarket the other day. It was halibut fish, $26 a pound. Now, that is getting, and there wasn't any fish there that was under $10 a pound. Wow. In the meat, prices also quite high due to compared to normal. Chicken heist prices fairly high. Just looking in the local grocery store. So world food prices are going to skyrocket. And all we need is some kind of an event, some kind of small event, and it could trip the wire and these things would just become unmanageable. Just another quick report before I get into the Planet X topic. EPA study just released. This is just out, hot off the press. The EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency report, says that the use of the sludge, the chemical sludge that they call fluoride, it sounds like such a clean, healthy name, and dentists use it in all kinds of treatment, that the fluoride chemical sludge that they use in toothpaste, put in your drinking water, or dentists use in dental office, is a poison and can kill you. And I know the studies, the original use of fluoride was in pre-World War II Germany. They put it in the water to sedate the people. That's where it comes from. That's why they pushed across the U.S. and got the American Dental Association to condone it, that fluoride is good for your teeth. Wow. And so people are drinking it. They make little pills. They're purple in color for little kids to take. If they're on well water, they encourage them to take these little fluoride pills, thinking that it's going to be, and parents actually do this, thinking it's good for their health. People listen to the evening news, and of course, that's where it is pumped, through the news readers on the evening news. But the EPA report coming out just hot off the press, fluoride, the fluoride chemical sludge that they put in water, in toothpaste, etc., is a poison, can kill you. Okay, on to the main science topic, talking about the many Planet X objects. There are many, and there are people talking about a Planet X object coming in the immediate future. Many people have asked me to comment on this. I don't personally have any information, and what I would need is data, hard data. What is the orbit? Where is it coming from? Where could you look to see this object? Because by now, it would be in the form of a large comet, and yes, it's not going to look like a big orange ball up in the sky. It would be in the form of a comet. And so just to answer the question, I myself do not have any information that the information that I see coming around is that there are people who say they have inside government sources that confirm that. I don't personally have any myself. And I would want to see data indicating orbits, where to look for such an object, etc., and then to have a second source or a third source, or myself, better yet, confirm that. But so at any rate, I don't personally have any data that would indicate that Planet X is imminent or here. So at any rate, but there are many Planet X objects out there. As they begin to move into the region of the solar system, and remember earlier I was talking about the solar wind, the solar capacitor that's out there probably about three times the distance to Pluto. So it's out there very far. It's very far out in the solar system. Let's take an object that's, say, on a million-year orbit. It only comes back through the solar system once every million years. It's out in that deep freeze area for basically the better part of that million years. And so it orbits out, starts to swing back, coming back in towards the sun. Only when it starts getting relatively near, like out to that Pluto region, does it start to pick up speed as it comes into the inner solar system. By then, it's already starting to break down the solar capacitor, becoming a plasma discharge comet, and by the time it gets in near Saturn into that region, it can start to be, the tail can start to be dense enough to where it's reflecting enough light that it can be viewed from Earth as a comet. Some of the biggest comets in history were observed way beyond Saturn. And of course, once again, that is not commensurate with the dirty snowball comet model. So at any rate, once they get into that point, they start discharging the solar capacitor and they start picking up speed and they start drawing in material from the outer solar system. If they have companions, if they're big enough to have companions, which many of them do, then you would start to see multiple comets, one rotating around the other one, orbiting the other one, as did Hale-Bopp. And so from those original photographs, you can tell that, yeah, Hale-Bopp had a companion. And from just measuring the radius of the orbit of the companion and its periodicity, the time it takes to go around the nucleus once, you can make a pretty good estimate of the mass of the core nucleus. And in the case of Hale-Bopp, it was planet-sized. It was a planet-sized nucleus. Hale-Bopp was a big nucleus, and Hale-Bopp came in on about a 4,200-year orbit. Now, let's put it this way, that's an orbit that's very much related to our sun and working its way in to become a planet. By the time it left the solar system, it was on around a 2,500-year orbit, 2,600-year, I believe, something like that. So it had, due to tail drag, daily, we saw the orbit changing. On a daily basis, that orbit was changing and modifying. The standard story now in standard science is that, oh, it passed near Jupiter, and that's why its orbit changed, but that is complete nonsense. That is not at all what happened. It passed not really close to Jupiter. It did pass Jupiter as it came up from the lower side of the solar system, but that is not what caused its orbit to change. The standard science is just covering up the fact that it can't explain And the reason I say, say that Hale-Bopp changed its orbit on a daily basis throughout its entire orbit, not just when it was near Jupiter, is because we have the ephemeris data saved that came out of the Smithsonian, where they catalog comet orbits. It was changing on a daily basis, not only when it was near Jupiter. So, but they have to hide that because only, according to the Dirty Snowball Comet model, only very small comet nuclei ice balls can have their orbits changed by a process they call jetting, where supposedly a jet of material comes out, and I still have yet to understand what they're talking about, because as the comet nucleus rotates, it would give a force in all directions, not one particular direction, and so it would result in zero change in the orbit. So I have yet to understand, but once again, these are NASA theories that somebody talks about a jet moving out in one direction. And then the other thing is that you would have some comets speeding up in their orbit instead of slowing down. So you would get you wouldn't get a consistent pattern of all comets slowing down in their orbits, as is observed. So once again, they don't think these concepts out. They have to agree with the Dirty Snowball Comet model. But the reality is that Hale-Bopp was a very big nucleus. It was planet-sized, and its orbit changed consistently on a daily basis, all of this being covered up. Somebody asked me the other day if NASA lies. And I don't know how big a yes I could possibly say or write or speak or say multiple times, yes, 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 NASA lies. And their apologists or the people that document, say, comet orbits, yeah, they lie. Are they? And you have to understand this. You have to ask yourself this question. Are they really that stupid, or are they lying? Are they really that stupid to think that comets are dirty snowballs? We have visited how many comets, nuclei, five now, with close approaches, none of them. Not a single one of them has any trace of water ice on the surface. The deep impact comet nucleus, Tempel 1, had a smattering of dust. They detected in one region kind of a smattering of what they determined was H2O. They didn't really quite say what form it was in, but it wasn't belching off the comet nucleus. There were no streamers, there were no jets that would look anything like artist depictions of what NASA scientists would expect, with snow and ice on the surface and jets coming out powerful enough to change the orbit of this object. Nothing. When you get right up to that comet nucleus, you turn all of your instruments on it to look for dust, for infrared, for anything coming off that nucleus, or looking for the presence of water in any form, in ice, in water, or in water vapor, you don't see anything. You don't see anything. Well, where does the water come from in the water tail? Well, it's, as I explained before, it's coming into the comet nucleus. The small comet nuclei do not have enough gravitational pull to keep that material in its region, so it blows out these ions, water, hydrocarbon, nitrogen, hydrogen compounds. They are ionized as they come into the comet nucleus, become neutralized because you have an abundance of electrons there. They become neutralized and they float out in the solar wind. And scientists can go back there and measure those. They call them neutrals. And so that's where they're coming from. So scientists incorrectly assume that they're coming off the comet nucleus. So, once again, but they have their head stuck in the sand. They can't bring it out to look at anything else. And so life is good. They keep getting their paycheck. And it also is very convenient for people in control, because if people understood what comets really were, that they are the plasma discharge of the solar capacitor, they would soon learn that there is a tremendous amount of electricity in outer space, and all we have to do is reach out and grab some of it, and we no longer need nuclear or coal or oil. We can run all of our industry on electricity, The oil energy industry, the oil, coal, nuclear energy industry, that is very controlling and is very damaging not only to the environment but to the economy, it's none of that needs to be here. Okay, so you have to understand, once again, this comes back to the bankers and control. They use energy to control the populace, the high price of energy. That's why there's food shortages. We don't need food shortages. We should have plenty of food stored up from before, but no president is foresightful enough to do what they did in the Bible. The Bible has records going back into ancient times of droughts where they needed food stored up. Those that didn't store it up died. Those that stored up the food survived. Very simple. Food is one of the most basic things you need. Also water. By the way, when I was talking about the fluoride study, the EPA, a lot of people don't use the fluoride water filters, the add-on filters to your water filter. If you have a water filter like either the Dalton or my name brand, make sure you're using those add-on filters, the fluoride arsenic removal, because in the United States, there's a high level of arsenic in all the groundwater, whether you get it from the city or you get it from a well or even a shallow well. There's arsenic in the water. And then they add fluoride to the water, that chemical sludge that sounds like such a great deal to put in your, the dentists approve it. But anyway, you want to remove all of that. So make sure you go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and make sure you stock up on those fluoride arsenic filters. And if you don't have a gravity feed water filter, well, all I can say is you better get one. Because if this society crumbles, that's the first thing you're going to need, and it's going to be the first control item that governments are going to use to control the populace. I'm running out of time here. I just want to remind people that my calendar device is on the web page. I'm very happy with the response to that. And get your version, your copy of this, just $39.95. It's the Emergency Survival Recalendar Portable Sunstar Clock. It allows you to rebuild the calendar in a single day of observing. You can either use the sun or you can use the stars. And then if there's any kind of man-made or natural event, you can rebuild the calendar and have a clock. And if there's anything major like a pole shift, you can build, you can reconstruct a new calendar and compare it to our current calendar. So at any rate, this is Jim McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.